give you the perspective from an immunization program manager, and that perspective is kind of the 30,000 foot level. So if you think about the federal level, that's probably the 50 or 60,000 foot level, and then the program manager's working at the state level, and then at the local level, which is where everything happens. And so I'm not presuming to give you that perspective, but like I said, that 30,000 foot perspective. And my title of my presentation is Eating an Elephant, Moving Towards School Age Flu Vaccination. And I'm gonna actually skip my first couple slides just because Tony really went over those in his presentation. So we'll, as he mentioned, there's a new ACIP recommendation that all children 6 months through 18 years should be vaccinated annually with influenza vaccine. And when that hit the news in Minnesota, there was a lot of attention to that and a lot of questions for us as the program manager. And so I'll start with the fact that that's kind of where the elephant comes in. I got asked about, well, how do you plan to do this? How will you have this ready to go by next season? And that type of thing. And really, this new recommendation represents a challenge of elephantine proportions. And so what I found myself saying to the media was, you know, we're going to have to eat this elephant one bite at a time. And so that's kind of the perspective I'd like to give you as I go through my presentation today, is eating an elephant one bite at a time. When you talk about the scope of this effort, and I think Tony really alluded to this in his presentation, it seems like it's easier because it's going to be a simpler recommendation, but really building capacity to conduct annual universal childhood influenza vaccination is going to be challenging because states and local providers really in the past have focused on the context of childhood immunizations and well child care. And that's not to say that we weren't focusing on influenza immunization, but in a completely different context. When you look at our expectations, the states, as I said, are that 30,000 foot level. We provide broad guidance and operationalization of the VFC program. Local public health are that on the ground safety net, and providers, healthcare providers, provide a medical home. And so this is going to require that we kind of look at our roles in a different way. We're going to have to really focus on and collaborate with non-traditional vendors. We have to develop cooperative relationships. We need to ensure quality, and that's not to suggest that non-traditional vendors don't offer quality, but just I think that when we think about AFIX and working with the more traditional providers, we have systems in place for quality assurance. In Minnesota, we've started something for our non-traditional vendors, but it's something that I think other states probably want to think about. And then how do we protect the medical home while addressing the need to vaccinate all kids? Well, one of the things that comes up is schools and school-based immunizations. And yet I think we have to acknowledge that schools really have limited infrastructure. They have reduced funding. I know it's true in our state, and I'm sure it's true in yours. No extra funding for immunizations. They have fewer school nurses than they want, and those nurses are expected to provide care for increasingly complex medical situations for their students. And the schools are also being pressured to, you know, do academic testing, mandated curriculums, all kinds of things that shift their focus away from what we'd like to see them. I mean, we want to see them focus on school, but we'd like them to think about immunizations occasionally. And then local public health, too, is being challenged. Our infrastructure isn't what it ought to be. We've got funding cuts happening. We have decreased experienced staff, and by that, in Minnesota, when we look ahead, we're having a huge proportion of our experienced staff that are eligible to retire in the next number of years. And then there are new and difficult public health issues like emergency preparedness that divert staff time. So schools, while they're an excellent venue, have challenges. Public health has challenges. And then the vaccine supply. And I know we've got more and more manufacturers coming into the market, but a lot of the new vaccine supply is licensed for people 18 years and older. And so there can be a bit of an issue there. And then for those of us that work with VFC, that program is an excellent entitlement program, but for whatever reason, we've had challenges with our allocation of influenza vaccine. And so that's kind of an issue for us as we think ahead to this recommendation. And then the idea that we need to be anticipating uptake a year in advance. And so as the recommendations change, we needed to be anticipating that well before, you know, this time of year. So those are all challenges that face state public health programs. one of the things that I wanted to bring up is not a challenge, but something that we have to think about if we're going to be considering implementing this kind of broader approach to vaccination, and that is the immunization information systems and those issues. It's really important that as we look to providing vaccination, and particularly in non-traditional settings, that we use our IIS systems or our registries to help us so that we can coordinate communication with the medical home. If a child receives their influenza vaccination outside of their medical home, that provider will still have access to their record. We want to facilitate building capacity for real-time data entry. We want to use IIS systems because they can help increase the capacity and infrastructure for reporting adverse events. When you consider vaccinating all children 6 months of age through 18 years of age every year with influenza and the impact that that could have on our vaccine adverse event reporting system, it's important that we increase that capacity to report adverse events. The other thing that immunization information systems can help us do is the idea of centralized data storage, that they can help us determine our influenza immunization rates, which will be really important. Even though I mentioned that this is eating an elephant and, you know, our perspective in Minnesota is one bite at a time, we want to at least be able to quantify what that bite looks like. And so by utilizing our registry systems, that will help us so that we can provide feedback to those folks that are interested in terms of how well we're doing. And then the other thing is our systems will give us some ability to project supply and demand, because this is going to be a gradual program with a gradual increase in uptake, and we've got to be able to sort of anticipate that as we go. I just had to put this in because when I was looking for elephants, I found this. It says, he wants a system with lots of memory but without a mouse. So anyhow, that was your humor for the afternoon. The other thing that we're going to need to do when we consider eating this elephant is expanding the traditional settings that we usually work with. Our providers are excellent at providing immunizations in the routine childhood schedule, but when they're looking at vaccinating their entire pediatric population every single year for influenza, they're going to need to think about new ways of doing that. And that includes offering walk-in only immunization clinics, which is something that they may not have considered in the past. Having evening and weekend hours for parents and folks that can't come in and schedule an appointment. It's not realistic to schedule an appointment. And then they're going to need provider education in terms of how this can work for their clinic and work within their clinic. The other thing, as I mentioned, is the issue of adverse event reporting. How can we help providers with that kind of thing? So educating them on how they can use and expand their systems to meet the needs of their patients, and then in addition, how can they report adverse events? In addition, because as we mentioned, children less than 9 need to receive 2 doses of vaccine to help them track those children needing a second dose. Up until this point, it's just been their high-risk patients, and now it will be all their patients in that age range, so how can we help them with that? And then also to help and educate them about anticipating the doses needed into the future. What I'd like to do now is give you some examples from Minnesota, and I do this, I was doing this humbly before I got here, but I'm doing it even more humbly after hearing about Hawaii. So I'm just telling you, there are plenty of other states that have done things, and they've done them on a bigger and broader scale. So I want to have that disclaimer up front. We did not do 60,000 kids in any of these examples. But I think what these examples show us, even in the smaller case of Minnesota, is that it can be done. And so this just shows you where in our state these pilots happened. We had a 3-county pilot that happened really in greater Minnesota, and then a project with our VNA that was in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Twin Cities metropolitan area. The school-based vaccination project was really 3 local public health agencies, and they were given grant money to cover implementation costs, and we had about $200,000 from CDC for this. It involved a cooperative relationship with schools. The clinics were conducted during school hours. Most of the vaccine was donated, but some of the vaccine that was provided was VFC vaccine for those eligible students. And what the schools found, and I'm sure that if you talk to Hawaii and probably Maryland and some of the other states that I know have done this, their efforts required full-time staff from mid-August through December to work on this. And they used additional temporary professional staff at the time of the clinics. They operated under their agency's medical director's standing orders. And if I'll just quickly go through the three counties. In Stearns County, which includes St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is a little bit bigger, I wouldn't call it a metropolitan area, but it's definitely not rural. 33% of their students are vaccinated, and as you can see, elementary schools are much better or easier to reach with vaccine than the older ages. In Maurer County, which is on the Iowa border, 58% of eligible, whoops, Bernard is sort of impinging on the data there, sorry. 58% of eligible students were vaccinated. They did track those students who were vaccinated in their medical home, so they had a total of 67% vaccinated. And again, elementary schools did better than high schools. And I believe there might be a typo there, because I don't know how we can have 58%, but at any rate. In Lyon County, 59% of eligible students are vaccinated, and in that county, actually, middle schools did better, but again, elementary and the younger age is much better than high school. And what we learned through these vaccination experiences was that it's really important to coordinate with providers. This project started in the spring and summer months, and what happened was that a lot of providers obviously had already ordered their vaccine, and so there was concern that this was competition with those providers, which is not desirable. If you're going to do a school-based program, it's going to be staff intensive, and you might want to consider students from professional groups like nursing, pharmacy, medical students, and you might want to consider your medical reserve corps that you're using for emergency preparedness. Use of LAIV was found to be really excellent in this situation. It was minimally disruptive, and it was readily accepted. These folks would suggest that you start your planning early enough, look for sources of funding, and they also remind you that elementary grades are easier than the older grades, because the older grades have probably figured it out and aren't as willing to participate. Then I wanted to mention another project that was done in Minnesota, and what I think is really interesting about this is that it is school located but not school based. And at the ACIP meeting in February, Kristen Nickel, who's from Minnesota, mentioned the idea that maybe we should not focus on school based clinics but school located clinics. And in this case, our Minnesota Visiting Nurse Agency, they have a long history of providing vaccines in grocery stores, that type of thing. And they happen to provide nursing services for the Minneapolis Public Schools. So they have a lot of experience. Now, they have less experience vaccinating children under 9 years of age. But they wanted to do a pilot study looking at the feasibility of providing influenza vaccination within the school and what was needed to do that. They held their clinics after school, so it didn't disrupt the school setting. Families could bring siblings in. They did not use LIV in this situation because they were concerned about screening issues. They vaccinated 250 children, and what they found was that many kids had already been vaccinated in their medical home, which is a wonderful thing to discover. The school nurses obviously were very enthusiastic about this because their role was cheerleader as opposed to coordinator. And the parents and even the kids were actually very positive about it. Parents reported that it's difficult to get their kids into the doctor, and that sometimes clinics were out of vaccine, so this was perceived by them as something that was very convenient. What the Visiting Nurse Association learned was that an established infrastructure made this more feasible. Clearly, it takes a long time to get consent forms back, and I think that's true whether you're doing this as an in-school clinic or a school-located clinic. And then consider use of LAIV, especially for the older ages who have a significant needle phobia by then. So in summary, what I hope that I've done is given you the information that you need to know that, you know, the will to do this exists. Clearly the ACIP, national leadership, recognizes the value of expanding the recommendations. And I think we recognize it as well as the people that are on the ground. We know how to do this. I just gave you a couple examples of some sort of small potatoes work in Minnesota. You've heard about Hawaii. You may have heard Greg Reed present from Maryland in the past. We do know how to do this. And we recognize that financing needs, vaccine supply, and staff resource needs do exist. So I don't want to suggest that that this is completely a Pollyanna perspective. There are needs that exist. But I think that if we focus on this as something that we do together, and if we consider the pace, I'm saying the pace needs to be reasonable and deliberate. And when I say, but together we can make this happen, what I mean is that together, that means we have to have cooperation at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. We all need to be working together to move forward. And then in addition to that sort of three-tiered approach, we also need to make sure that we've established public and private partnerships. So if we work on that together, if we recognize that there's challenges, but we're going to move ahead, one bite at a time, then I think that we really can be successful. And so that's kind of what I, like I said, that's what I've been telling our media when they asked me about how are we going to do this. I said, we're going to eat this elephant one bite at a time. So I'd like to just acknowledge some elephant eaters in Minnesota and then conclude with, how do you eat an elephant? You eat them one bite at a time. And apologies to any elephants in the audience. So.